Your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Stirring the Cauldron. Now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Hey, Merry Meet everybody, and welcome to Stirring the Cauldron here on the Para-X Radio Network. I hope I'm not welcoming you to a nightmare, as the opening song suggests, but we will be talking about nightmarish places tonight with my guest, Corvus Nocturnum. Corvus is an occult researcher, a gothic fantasy artist, a Satanist, a vampire, the co-author and publisher of Dark Moon Press, and a prolific author. And he's here to talk about a couple of his new books, which could potentially cause a nightmare or two. One is Most Haunted, Scariest Places in the World, and the other one is Haunted Asylums. Welcome, Corvus.
Hello, thank you for having me on.
I think we're going to do a great job of scaring people tonight, or at least giving them a case of the willies, which is a good start.
Quite possible.
Okay, so these are really interesting book topics, insane asylums and the world's scariest places. And if you'll forgive the pun, what possessed you to write about those two things?
Actually, it was something new, a venture in an area that I had I'd never been involved in before. So, you know, it kind of made me want to venture into it myself. I mean, there was a lot of different places and people that I'd already been friends with wanted to be involved in it. So it was just kind of interesting for me to explore along with everybody else.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's start talking about insane asylums or mental institutions, call them what you will, but they have both, no matter what you call them, they still have notoriously bad reputations. These were places that were supposed to help people, but in reality, I'm guessing they did more harm than good, which would account for the numerous hauntings in these historic buildings. Were these locations just places to abandon the mentally ill and keep them out of the public eye?
As far as I'm concerned, yes. That stems more directly out of the book by Schiffer Publishing for this November that's much larger and tons of color photos called Haunted Asylums. I mean, whether you believe in paranormal and ghosts yourself, there is a huge amount of fear, history, and terrible occurrences that happen at almost all of these places. So if there wasn't any such thing as ghosts, there should be, at least in these locations, as far as I can, you know, express. Because I tried to come across as the unbiased researcher. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just tell people this is the history of it, and here are the alleged hauntings. For people to make up their own minds, possibly visit, but there is a disclaimer in the beginning of the book, of course, that tells people make sure, because, you know, these are unsafe places. They're old, they're abandoned, there's broken glass, rusted metal, asbestos, and some of the places, you know, the majority of them are still owned, if not by the state, then by private people. And, you know, we don't want people breaking the law by breaking and entering. So I'm not advocating people just trample through these places, they can get hurt.
Yeah, and the thing of it is, it's not only breaking the law, it could be breaking your neck, and you could be ending up haunting one of these places. So, you know, not a good thing.
Definitely.
Well, you know, we hear about the tragic mistreatment of patients, you know, that they were beaten, they were, you know, ignored, God knows what. But I'm also guessing that, like with Dr. Mengele in Auschwitz, these were also places where poor people might have been experimented on for medical purposes, right?
Definitely. I mean, it started out as homeless people and so-called imbeciles, habitual criminals, war veterans, just anyone. It wasn't just the mentally unstable that were put in these type places. And, of course, they thought that they had free reign over, you know, these people because they were in charge of them, and, you know, experts, medical people, they're always right. And, you know, they wanted to experiment on the latest treatments. And, you know, there was one doctor who got into severe situations where he would actually go as far as to remove organs or even limbs from some of the patients because he said that their body parts were actually the cause of their malady.
Ooh. And I guess there was no kind of feedback or anybody watching, because I would think that a majority of the patients that were in there, rightfully or not, were dumped there and then forgotten, right?
True. By the middle of the 19th century, Thomas Kirkbridge was one of the influential psychiatrists that wanted to make things a little bit better. But I mean, he didn't want the mentally ill to be kept like animals like there were previously. He believed that, you know, beautiful settings would restore the balance of the senses, as he called it. So the floor design and everything, the giant, huge, gothic mausoleum-type places became known as the Kirkbridge Plan. And while that was a vast improvement over the old days, the treatment of the people at the facilities hardly improved. I mean, Danvers State Mental Hospital was one of the places that the movie Session 9 was actually based off of a case file, and that's a horror movie. Mm-hmm. Danvers was so infamous for its time period, to be quite honest, that horror novelist H.P. Lovecraft based Arkham Asylum in his stories off of the place, which of course in turn became Batman, you know, Arkham Asylum, where the Joker was stashed in DC Comics in the movies. They took that from the same thing. Mm-hmm. If people watch Session 9, it's about a story of a girl who is severely abused, and then later she's, you know, haunting and killing people that come to the asylum that are trying to renovate it, which I think is kind of fascinating because that movie was the final depiction that people were ever allowed to see other than the exterior of the front of the main building, because it's since been torn down and turned into apartment complexes except for the front brick facade. And, you know, people that live in those apartments swear they hear noises and sounds and things like that, even though most of the building has been rebuilt.
Well, I did a little research on Danvers. Let it not be said that I'm a lazy host. But for a different reason, Danvers was used to be referred lovingly to as the witch's castle on the hill.
Yes.
But also the fact that the town of Danvers was once called Salem Village, and it's believed that some of those innocents who were condemned as witches during the Salem witch trials in 1692 were hung on the hill where Danvers Hospital stands today.
That's correct. Yes.
Yeah, but it's a neat kind of double whammy to this place. I mean, you know, any mental hospital is bad to start with, and then, you know, you have all this going on. I tell you, honestly, if somebody offered me a luxury apartment there, I think I'd pass. You know.
Yeah, I mean, the outsides of all of these buildings usually are very beautiful, and the interiors on some of them had great big carved wooden staircases and intricate details to them. They were just massive beyond belief. You know, some of them held 5,000-6,000 people. So, you know, you have to stop to think, when they became overcrowded, you know, originally some of them were only supposed to hold 1,200-1,300 people, and they were brimming to 4,000 or 5,000. You know, how do you think these people were treated, crammed, you know, multiples per room?
Yeah. And it's really kind of sad and pathetic. And again, no wonder there is activity there, because there's a lot of, you know, to coin a phrase, restless spirits hanging around. And I think restless and angry spirits are bad enough, but I'm not sure, and somebody can correct me on this, but I don't think that when a patient who is mentally imbalanced passes over, I don't think he or she immediately gets back to, quote, normal, you know? So there may be a lot of unbalanced spirits there as well.
Right. You know, that's one thing to speculate about is who was it, what did they go through, and, you know, there's another thing, too. There's even more tragic than, I'm not trying to make light of the barbaric surgeries and the teeth pulling and, you know, beatings and things by the adults, but there were several references in the Haunted Asylums book where two or three of the locations were actually children's homes and tuberculosis wards, mm-hmm. where, you know, kids were sometimes beaten, or even one of the kids, you know, ghosts that someone said that they saw, and then they traced the story to verify it, was actually one child who was murdered by a group of other kids.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is a very depressing subject in some of these, but it's also, people are fascinated by what is creepy and bizarre. I mean, why do you think there's Thanatourism, where people go to Auschwitz and you know, places like that, or the bombing site of Hiroshima?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're curious, they're fascinated, they're scared and horrified, but they are curious and want to learn.
Yeah, and I mean, some of them are thrill seekers too, let's face it, but there is a certain draw to that for some people. I mean, sometimes it's curiosity. Sometimes, you know, it could be any number of things. But it's amazing that people actually do that. Now, there's another asylum that you cover in the book, the North Wales Lunatic Asylum in Wales, which also has kind of a witchy connection. When the TV show Most Haunted did one of their live events there, they claim the place to be cursed by witches. I'm guessing that a lot of people were sent to mental institutions because they were believed to be witches. Did you find any of that in your research?
Other than in passing here and there, but I think that the whole witch scare was a little more subdued, and they were focusing more on people that were degenerates. It was kind of like, you know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. With mm-hmm. Jack Nicholson. That was actually filmed at, I believe, the Oregon State Hospital, which is still in existence.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's one of the few oldest ones that's still around that supposedly takes care of the mentally ill.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the others have long been closed down, destroyed, demolished. You know, lightning has struck several of them and burned them down. or there's just charred husk of the brick buildings.
And of course, now with medical science and technology, there aren't quite as many people that are disabled with that. And then by the same token, I think way back when, anybody that kind of had a quirk might have been looked on as mentally ill, you know, somebody maybe with Tourette syndrome or you know, cerebral palsy, which they didn't understand back then. I think they probably just assumed that these people were lunatics. And then, you know, of course, people that were opinionated and had something to say that the masses didn't agree with could have also been tossed in for being nutter, you know.
Right.
There's so many reasons that people ended up there, and I'd kind of like to, well, I don't like to think this, but I do, that probably the great majority of people that were there did not belong there, and by being there, it probably kind of sent a few over the edge.
Right. I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there were many famous people who were tossed into insane asylums for whatever reason, but I was surprised to read about Mary Mallon, because I didn't think Typhoid Mary was crazy. I mean, I knew how she ended up in one of these facilities is a bit sad, because she just didn't think she was contagious, kind of thing.
Right. I don't really believe that she was crazy, but then again, half the people that were in these type of things weren't technically, mental. I mean, some of them were homeless, some of them were just... There was a story of an older lady who became very depressed because her husband died during a war, and she was rich and successful earlier. You know, so it's really tough to pin it down, to really say why they were there, or if the person really had problems. I mean, they would diagnose people with the craziest things, and they would be there for, you know, until they died, a lot of them. That's why a great many of these places have cemeteries on the properties, and the reason why the buildings can't be demolished is either the state owns them or there's a Supreme Court justice saying you cannot destroy property that has a cemetery on it.
Hallowed ground, yeah.
Right.
Well, I think in Mary's case, they gave her an option, you know, either go to the mental hospital or go to jail or something. I don't think she had free rein to be anywhere, and I think she probably took what she felt was the lesser of two evils. But, I mean, I think it's not a good thing that she didn't believe she was contagious. And you know, I mean, I, in a way, can understand that. But, boy, she was passing it around left and right. And that's not, you know,
yeah,
really not a good thing.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Do you know offhand or in your research, did she lived her life out there?
I do believe she lived the rest of her life there and just eventually died there of old age or by disease. She was fairly up there at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, other than Mary, in your research, did you come across any other famous ghosts that might be haunting these facilities, any of them?
There was a famous musician who ended up dying shortly after being diagnosed with the disease and put into one of the, I'm trying to find his name. It escapes me at the moment. Yeah, have to forgive me. I wrote both of these almost a year ago, so it's tough to.
Oh, you're very forgiven from a fellow author who did five books in a row, couldn't remember one from the other. Yeah, yeah, it gets a little crazy, but because I mean, you know, you hear about. I know there was this actress, and oh, my God, her name is – oh, my God, I'm getting old. Frances Farmer, that kind of flipped out and ended up in an insane asylum in the 40s, but I think she managed to get out. I mean, a lot of people probably in later years have gone to these places, and some made it and some didn't, but I think, you know, back the farther back you go about these institutions, the harsher the treatment, the less tolerance and less understanding about why the people were there. So it gets a little crazy after a while.
I believe his name was Gerthy. I'm not sure.
Okay. Yeah. I can just, I would kind of be a little bit hesitant to investigate some of these places myself. Not that I'm a scaredy cat or anything, but they're just, I would think, so oppressive.
Yeah, especially Gabler's Children Asylum, that I believe it was torn down a year or so ago. But, you know, local teenagers were trespassing around the area. People that live in the neighborhood would lament the fact that it was torn down because it was something from their childhood, even though the conditions were terrible there. You know, but some of the places are quite open for tourism, like Rolling Hills. Then Waverly TV Ward, you know, they give tours there directly, and it's quite a business for the current owners.
Yeah, which in some ways, okay, it's good for investigators, but I kind of, I don't know, not that I frown on people making money off of tragedy, but sometimes I do. you know, I mean, these places do need to be open and available for those who want to get out and truly investigate for the right reasons. But, you know, I don't know. And see, my thing too is when a location is investigated over and over and over and over and over again, it kind of loses its charm, not only to the people that go, but to the spirits that are there. I mean, it gets overfished. And, you know, if you walk into a place that is extremely haunted but has not been visited very much, you're bound to get a lot more activity because the spirits get interested. Oh, look, we have company. We have guests, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm not trying to make light of it, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I understand completely.
Somebody's in and out every 5 minutes, they just kind of yawn and go off and do something else, I think. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I don't know if they, you know, if you prescribe to the whole spirits are there and then, you know, they could, I don't know, possibly dissipate because of so much traffic from other people. I don't really know. I'm not a paranormal expert. I've only ventured into it as a researcher for, you know, the two different books here. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the scariest places in the world, you know, most haunted, is written more on a simpler level of a chapter for each type of thing, not just one small chapter on asylums, but, you know, I tried to branch into catacombs, like in Paris, where the skull-lined walls went on for what seemed like miles, because even that was, it's been around since before World War II.
Yeah.
And I believe The Cask of Amontillado by Edgar Allan Poe was based off of several different catacombs like that. I mean, it goes back definitely years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's. I think let's switch over to that because you've got a lot of very well-known places in the book, like Eastern State Penitentiary, you know, said to be America's most haunted prison, and Bran Castle, home of the Impaler. But I, to be honest, I really would never have even thought of Auschwitz-Birkenau. Although, if it's not the scariest place in the world, I don't know what is. What made you come up with that? It's so obvious. Yet, duh.
Well, the pure horror that was perpetrated there. I mean, people that were not only put into ovens, but the fact that the relatives of the people were actually in charge of processing the remains and shoveling, you know, the ashes of their, you know, descendants, countrymen, you know, things like that, as they themselves were starving to death and, you know, shot if they tried to escape. You know, if it's not insane asylums or prisons where people died violently, you know, then what other than a concentration camp would not truly be one of the most terrifying places to visit? And
yeah,
it isn't
heinous, yeah.
Yeah, it isn't about the shock value, it's about the education. Because if you go to some of these places, there's tour guides that actually will tell you what happened. You'll get literature, you'll see slideshows sometimes. Mm-hmm. They'll have plaques all over the place where it's inscribed with dates and, you know, key facts in history. And I think people overlook that. They're just going for the sensationalism. And, you know, people could say, well, you're sensationalizing it because you're writing about it. But, you know, I digress there. It's about being an author that tries to teach people as well.
Well, that's it. And I know I've seen videos and things and walking into, I don't know, call it the lobby of one of the main rooms. There are different display cases. One is piled with shoes. One is piled with glasses. One is piled with suitcases. I mean, these are actually the things that they found when they came in and liberated the camp. So you have, you know, just display case after display case after display case of things that once belonged to human beings, you know.
They're real people.
Yes. And I think that kind of comes as a shock value. It's all well and good to listen and read about this stuff, but to actually be able to be within inches, you know, behind a glass case of somebody's glasses or, you know, a pair of shoes or something, I think that's where something like that really hits home and makes people realize that this was not a good thing. And so many millions of lives, you know, I mean, it's sheer numbers there.
Right. I mean, it's into the millions. And the fact that they were trying to open multiples of these. And, you know, different governments were tipped off that they existed, but they blew it off because they thought it was so absurd and horrifying on a massive scale that it couldn't possibly be real.
Yeah.
So it was ignored until someone got footage from, I believe it was an airplane, and inside information from some Poles who escaped that told their story, and that's how the Allies went and, you know, shut it down.
Well, after the liberation, I have had a cousin who was quite a bit older, but he was one of the first Americans in the Army to go into Auschwitz and liberate, and the stories that he came out with were just horrible. You know, can you imagine walking in? I mean, people knew what was going on there, but they didn't actually see it.
Right.
And for the Allies to go in and liberate these camps for the first time and actually see what was going on, that was where the horror came, I think. Because, like you said, people would kind of deny it, and it couldn't be. It's not that, you know, it couldn't be. But all of a sudden, boom, you know, there were people walking in and seeing it firsthand. And that had to be awful. And, you know, I've always said that, although no official investigations have ever been done there, most probably because of the atrocities that went on, and it's holy, like almost a shrine status, they wouldn't be allowed. But that would be one place that if somebody asked me in the world where I'd want to investigate, and for the right reason, not just to be a looky-loo, that would always be a place that would come to mind, just to see and communicate and see what's left there. It's
yeah.
Amazing.
I mean, for me, a good share of this is my love of history and teaching people, because I really wanted to poke around. I mean, I probably could have taken years and made it, you know, twice as thick. But I just wanted to get the key places out there for people to start maybe their own investigation into things like that. I mean, I have to admit, I put out 6 different titles this year, and my publishing company put out 20 of the 40 that it already has.
Wow.
So, you know, that and finishing my bachelor's in the next couple months, it was a bit overwhelming, and had I not been that bogged down with so much, I probably would have made it a bit bigger. But, you know, people have also written to me saying that, you know, it's nice to have 200-300 page books, but they're 20 and some odd dollars.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're on a budget. And so not only did I want to have a few, you know, smaller, better priced books for people to, you know, choose from, I've actually made the progression into doing Kindle for the Dark Moon Press titles on Amazon.com.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a new development, and I'm proud to say that not only are we on Amazon.com, but we're on all of the foreign Amazon websites as well.
Isn't that neat? I looked up some of my books in there, and I love it when you go and you can't read what it's all about, what they're saying. You know, it's all written in Chinese and stuff. Very cool, though. Very cool. Amazon's very, very good about that. you know, I'm loving some of the other lesser known places that you've included in the book as well, like the Medieval Torture Museum in Italy, the Boni Church. Let's talk a little bit about both of those. I've seen the Boni Church on TV, and it officially creeps me out.
I didn't get a chance to watch it, but I did reference the fact that a really famous actor actually was featured on the show. I'm sorry, his name is right on the tip of my tongue.
We both have it tonight.
I could say Obi-Wan Kenobi, and you know, people will get it. But it's a place that I chose for the cover of the book. It was so fascinating to me that a monk actually dug up the remains, and they were storing the bones in different areas, and because of the Black Plague and then later World War I, over that long span of time in such a small area, they literally had nowhere to put all the bodies.
Right.
So, you know, it was really interesting to me because it was twisted. It's kind of sick and depraved if you really want to be sanctimonious, you know, about bodies and everything, but it was a church. And, you know, yet if you look at the cover of the book, it practically screams H.R. Giger because of his work in the first couple Aliens movies.
Well, and actually a lot of people, when they see the chandeliers and all the decorations that are made, I mean, in a stretch, but technically they are works of art.
Yes, I find them creepy, but amazingly detailed and artistically put together. I believe the gentleman who created a lot of the sculpts was a wood carver originally in the, I believe, 1700s or possibly earlier, where he had a severe challenge of what to do with all these, you know, hundreds to thousands of remains, and yet he used almost all of them. I mean, the skulls line the staircases, bones form, you know, framework and everything for other artworks. There's a giant chalice made out of bones. You know, I've heard of Lord Byron having a skull dug up that he claimed was by an abbot, and it was his personal drinking goblet.
Yes,
I have a replica of it myself made by Alchemy Gothic because it was so cool.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's one thing, but to design an entire cathedral where everything except for possibly the outside is covered with human remains is just fascinating. And if I could get, you know, permission and all my documentation for travel, I would definitely, you know, go see all these places myself.
And, you know, I don't think like some other places, I don't kind of get the impression that there's a heaviness there either. I don't know, it's strange, but I just kind of look at that, and it's kind of calming in a sense.
Pretty calming. The church, possibly, but as far as the torture museum, there's several of them, actually, all over the world, I found.
Yes.
But those are the ones that are creepy to me, because that's what someone chose to do to countless people just for their own gain, or because they believe that they're belief system, their religion was, you know, pure, and no matter what they did, it was worth it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they would put people in chairs that had spikes covering them, they would tighten it down, and then the bottom was made out of metal, so they would put, you know, coals, so the seat would heat up even more to make the people scream until they confessed to anything the people wanted to hear.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's supposed to be religion, you know, so I'm kind of going,
So they say, yeah.
Yes.
I mean, it is very creepy. And then, of course, there's the Serial Killer Museum in Florence, Italy. And what the heck were they thinking?
There's a lot in that small, small little country. I mean, you have Tuscany and the wines and the great food and the culture. And, you know, people think of Italy as the gentle, peaceful country, but they have one of the torture museums. They have the Serial Killer Museum, where there's actually wax life-size figures of Dahmer and Gacy. You see Gacy in his clown outfit sitting, you know, with people. You see Ed Gein making, you know, his little lampshade or whatever out of skin. And, you know, it blew me away, some of the stuff I found while I was researching this. And I was like, oh my God, one of these days I have to visit all these places. And I'd love to take a camera crew with me and, you know, do a documentary or something.
Well, you never know. You know, things like that. Stranger things have happened, right?
Yeah, that's a little hint on my future to my fans out there.
Yes, it is. It is, definitely. And I'll give you a chance a little bit later to hint just a teeny bit more. But, I mean, can you imagine? You know, I mean, here's shows like Bizarre Foods, you know, Anthony Bourdain with his No Reservations traveling all over the place. And every so often around Halloween, you see a show that deals with, you know, something a little bit odd or whatever.
Well,
but
I'm kind of in the initial negotiations with several different people and companies at the moment. But since it's also hinging on a future book that I've just finished that Schiffer will put out next year, I can't give away too much.
Mm-hmm. Well, all I'm going to say is my fingers are crossed, and I'm going to be casting a spell for that to happen, because that is definitely something I would want to watch, because it's fascinating. It's things that make you stop and think, I think, are important things to watch and learn about. And, you know, could be for the good, could be for the bad, but it uses a little brain matter rather than, you know, the mindless TV that a lot of us watch half the time, you know, so... Something like that. And I've always liked travel programs. You know, I like to see how other cultures live and, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly. It's always kind of fascinating. So, yeah, we're going to do a little spell work for that, Corvus, just so you know.
Yeah. Well, people, if they're out there and, you know, they want to, you know, watch if it ever comes to fruition. And, you know, the ratings and the viewers is what's going to keep something like that on the air. And I can't really say for sure, you know, if, you know, I'm debating the History Channel, the Travel Channel, Discovery, Sci-Fi. It's all, you know, up in the air, but I am talking to some production companies that are involved in several of those above-mentioned TV shows. So, it's definitely in the works, something along this genre.
That's exciting. And I know one of the places, I'm going to do this really neat segue right now, listen. One of those places that you will definitely be going to is the Catacombs of Paris, which is, okay, I've always been creeped out by catacombs, especially the ones that have the floor-to-ceiling bones. And I'm not sure I would jump in there with both feet and really be happy to be there. But let me ask you this. I mean, I would be worried about spirits being in places like that looking for their bones, especially when the majority of cases there are no full skeletons. I mean, you know, they make a wall of 10,000 skulls or a leg bone partition, or, you know, it would be impossible for any spirit to ever find their whole skeletons. But correct me if I'm wrong now, in your belief system, when a person dies, they just kind of turn to dust and are gone. They don't come back, so like there's no lingering spirits. Is that correct?
Yeah, so I guess in a way, if I'm tramping around through the ruins, I'm just, you know, interested from an artistic and historic viewpoint. And I'm not creeped out by, ooh, the ghosties are going to get me. So I can go into these places that some people would be, you know, what's the old expression, where angels fear to tread.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and in a way that's a good thing, you know. I mean, to go in there completely unbiased, I think sometimes makes a big difference. You know, that's why I think a lot of times when we go on investigations here and there, it's best not to know what happened before. You know, it's good enough to know that this place is haunted and then find out for yourself while you're there what you find, and then, of course, compare notes later. I think that's why a lot of mediums don't want to know ahead of time.
Well, I guess you could say that it keeps me not so much a pessimist or, you know, naysaying all the stories that other people say exist. It keeps me objective as a sociologist and a historian, where I can try to be a little more clear to other people and say, this is what I've heard. judge it for yourself. I'm not bashing anybody else's belief system at all.
Right. Yeah, and you can't, because everybody's entitled to that. But I just think sometimes it's really difficult to know too much. Maybe that's the thing. And it does take away from the objectivity when you're going. And especially, I mean those catacombs, they go for miles, you know. I mean, can you imagine ever getting locked down in one by mistake? I mean,
that would bother me more.
Night of horror. Yeah, because, I mean, okay, so the leg bones might not bother me, that leg partition, but all those skulls staring at me would definitely give me a bad case of the collywobbles for sure. And things like that have happened, I'm sure. You know, I mean, some of them are some of the catacombs in different places, and even like the London Underground and like Mary King's Cross in Scotland, they're very well monitored. You know, people are only allowed to go to certain areas, and there's people around to watch that doesn't happen. But places that are so humongous, I mean, it has to be that somebody's gotten lost there from time to time.
Yeah, I didn't encounter anything like that, but I'm sure that it probably has happened. And, of course, they're not going to put that out there in the news, because whatever the country is, they get revenue from the tourism.
Well, yeah. You know, and it's not like you can drop breadcrumbs along the way so you find your way back either. I mean, because there's always going to be somebody who, where there says no trespassing, is going to go there, you know, for whatever reason. And it just kind of makes me wonder if, you know, if somebody went way deep into the bowels of someplace they shouldn't have been, and 5 years later they found their skeleton there.
Right. That would be kind of, I mean, I didn't focus on it in another book I'm working on when I was talking about the different, you know, terrifying places. Yeah, there's one in Japan where it's actually called the Suicide Forest, where hundreds of people go there to commit suicide. And, you know, you find little dolls and notes pinned to trees and the remains of campgrounds. And they try to take the bodies down in a way as much as they can. The park does. But I thought about it hard, and then I took that out of the book that I'm working on because I don't want it to seem insensitive to people who are suffering. You know, so that was a difficult choice, because I also thought, well, maybe it could be a tool to educate people and reach out, but I thought, well, it's a little too sensitive, too. It could be very, very misread.
Yeah, I mean, there will, and this is going to be a really bad, not funny joke, but it'll be, you know, people would refer to it kind of as the human elephant cemetery, you know, where elephants go to die, where people go to die, kind of thing. And yeah, I mean, it's a very tough line to cross. I mean, you have to be sensitive about all these things. I mean, there is nothing in this world, I think, that can't be appreciated on a slightly humorous side for some aspect or another, but not when it comes to disrespect. And I think that's where the line has to be drawn. So you never know. But that sounds like a really kind of really haunted forest, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, but it was a difficult choice. I mean, I did cover Burkow, you know, Auschwitz and things like that. Mm-hmm. But that was the closest line that I took, because it was historical. And in the past, whereas this is, you know, taking place right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes it difficult. Where can people find these two new books of yours and all the rest? I want to get to that before we run out of time.
Well, Most Haunted, Scariest Places on Earth is available through CorvusNocturnum.com and, of course, DarkMoonPress.com. If anybody orders either of those places and want me to autograph it, make sure you mention it in either in the message section of the PayPal, or you can write to me, check for money order, you know, well disguised cash in an envelope to the post office box on the website, or of course, if you prefer to use Amazon, I won't ever get to be able to sign those. Because I don't touch them, they get printed through Amazon, or you can do the Kindle. As far as the Most Haunted, if people want to order that early through my website, they have a drop-down menu where they can choose between ordering one or the other. But I am offering people to get The Scariest Places on Earth book for half the price if they order both of them, and if they get them through me, I will get copies from Schiffer, and I'll autograph both of them and ship them. So basically, you're getting one of them for only a few dollars.
Good deal, 2 for 1. It's always a bargain, because I will admit that I got not the books exactly, but I got the books. I got the ebooks of them, and I've read them both, and it was amazingly interesting. It held me. If I was holding it in my hand, I wouldn't have been able to put them down. However, I had to, pull the mouse away from time to time. So they really, you're a really good author, and I know you've been on my show a few times before talking about different books, and one is better than the other. You just keep on going, and that's going to lead me to ask you about some of the other projects that you're doing, some of the other books that have come out or you're working on.
Well, I have put out a lot of them this year that some people haven't even heard about, because I haven't honestly had time to majorly advertise them. There's one on pagans in their own words, pretty much. It's called Walking the Path of the Ancient Ways.
Oh, wow. I couldn't get that one.
Yeah, I had actually written to you to try to get you to submit a short story for it, but...
Things got... anyway. Sorry about that.
That's fine. I might do a second edition if it gets really popular, but Azure Green Abyss Distribution is buying it in quantity from me to put it through more and more pagan stores. So if you don't find a Dark Moon Press title that you like on the website, and you're used to going to supporting your local favorite occult store or New Age store, please ask the people working there to have them get a hold of Dark Moon Press or CorpusNocturnum@yahoo.com, because if they get a hold of me, I will open up a account with them so that they can order wholesale. And if they want it signed by me through their bookstore in their own hometown, all they got to do is let the store owner know to ask me, and I will make it out special to them, and they'll get it.
Yeah, I think that's what people don't realize, that you can go to any bookstore and request any book. All they need is the ISP number, and they'll stock it for you. And, some people say, well, this bookstore doesn't carry it, that bookstore doesn't carry it.
It's because they don't ask.
Yeah, they can get it in. So I think that's something that everybody should know, and a good way to find all the books that they're looking for,
A lot of people just say, well, I want to go to Amazon.com because they're a little cheaper, or I have an account with them, and that's fine. But the authors themselves don't make as much of a living to keep writing for you guys. If you don't go to them directly and say, hey, can I get one from you? And, of course, you can get it autographed, and that way it's a little more personal.
Yeah, exactly. I think autographed books, me as an author, if somebody asked me to autograph a book, I'm like, you really want my autograph? I don't get it. But then when I have other people send me autographed books, I really appreciate it. I really like it. So
you treasure them. I've gotten books signed by people that I've been a fan of, and now they're colleagues of mine, but I still treasure them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's the personal touch. That's what's important. All right, so what else? What other books? What are you doing? Some events? Are you, projects? What's going on? Because you're always, so busy.
Yes. I'm looking into, I'm waiting to hear back from the Dark Odyssey people and a few others that are running paranormal events down at Dragon Con down in Atlanta, Georgia. Because at the moment, Rosemary Ellen Guiley and I are planning on possibly doing a lecture together on a subject that we both know a lot about. So stay tuned for that. And if we manage to swing everything, I'm not saying 100% we'll both be there. But if I do, I'll let people know on Facebook. And then at the end of that very same month, at the end of September, for 3 or 4 days, I will be in Lexington at Scarefest in Kentucky. And if you guys are into either Clive Barker or the Walking Dead, those people will all be there with me.
Oh, wow. Nice yes. entourage. Wow.
So, yeah, last year I got to meet Elvira, Lance Henriksen, and talk to Ernie Hudson for quite a while before I got his autograph. And Dark Moon Press will have a booth right smack in the middle of the convention center.
Oh, wow. Fantastic.
So it's fun, and I definitely plan on going back year after year because you never know who they're going to mix up and change who's there. There's a lot of paranormal famous TV people there every year, and they rotate them out. Like, I believe it was Amy Bruni was there last year, and I got to say hi to her. Paranormal States, some of the new class was there. And this year, one of the other ones, I believe his name is Jason Gates, will be there. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, yeah, I know the name. Yeah. That's fantastic. I just got a question that's maybe a little off topic, but not what you weren't talking about earlier. She wants to know what your bachelor's will be in.
Criminal justice.
Yay. Okay. I wonder what she thought it might be in. But okay, that's
it kind of goes together in a way with some of the stuff that I'm working on for later. There is a descendant of H.H. Holmes, which the ancestor wrote a book called Bloodstains, where he theorized that his ancestor was actually Jack the Ripper. And he said he might be considering working on a project with me, you know, as much as we're both busy. It may be a couple of years, but when you take horror and the occult with criminology, I'd like to do a serial killer type of book with him.
Wow, that sounds really interesting, too. You've got your fingers in so many good pots, you know? I mean...
Yeah.
You're tired, you're exhausted, yeah. But boy, how gratifying is that?
I've told a few people that I'm almost glad that college is over for me in a couple months. And then at the beginning of my last internship, I'll be going to, you know, Georgia. And then at the very end of it, when I'm done, the day I leave school and my job at the library at the college, I'm going straight to, you know, Scarefest. And then after that, I'm done with school and have to look for another part-time job while writing. And it's like, you know what? I'll actually have a little free time, and that means more books.
I was going to say, you're going to know what to do with it, but you just answered my question.
I have way too many projects. I mean, I've got 13 titles out right now, and if I have my way in the next 2 years, if I'm not too busy traveling and going to different places working, then I will definitely be adding to that.
Wow. Ah, nimble fingers on that keyboard, boy. It pays off, but like I said, your books are so enjoyable no matter what you write about, and I would recommend them to anybody, and there's such a wide variety that it's kind of like something for everyone.
I don't want to be pigeonholed in people saying, oh, well, Corvus is a Satanist or into vampires, so that's all he writes. You know, what I want to do is go to vampires, go to, you know, zombies. That's the next book that I'm working on.
Very a la mode, you know.
Well, with Walking Dead at Scarefest, I'm going to try to talk to the guy who plays Shane, John Bernthal, and put him in the book, too. So, I'm trying to go back and forth between one type of thing and another extreme and then haunted places and then, you know, things like that. So people aren't predicting, you know, what I'm going to do next where they say, well, that's all he does.
None of us want to be typecast.
Right.
That's how it goes. Well, we are going to have to run out of here, but I really want to thank you for coming in. And, you know, you're always welcome with a new book or a new idea or a new thought. Please, you know, just knock on my door and say, hey, here I am, because it's always a pleasure to have you with me. Okay. And I want to thank everybody who's out there listening in chat and elsewhere. And I want to just make a mention that it would be fun if everybody joins me next week for a very special show. It's called Interview with a Demon. And I can't say too much about it because, as you might imagine, my guest doesn't want to put himself out there. But I will say this, you don't want to miss it. So until next time, everybody, blessed be and merry meet again. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
This has been another edition of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks.
Be sure to tune in next week at the same time for another great guest and more fun. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2009.
You have been listening to the Para-X Radio Network.